Well, in church, we have a minor problem, very minor, and that is that we knocked down a wall between two conference rooms. In the other building, we had the large conference room and we had the small conference room, but we knocked a wall down, so now we have the large conference room and the larger conference room, and it's causing confusion. So we've talked about names, and I think right now it's functionally being called the new blue room because it's painted blue, but I wanted to name it the Latimer room, and I wanted to name the other one the Ridley room. And it's because Latimer and Ridley were these incredible Anglican bishops in the time of the Reformation, both of whom were burned at the stake by Queen Mary, aka Bloody Mary, for their teachings. And in that moment, Hugh Latimer and Nicholas Ridley are tied to the stake. The year's 1555. It's in Oxford, England. They're about to die by fire and asphyxiation. And Latimer shouts across to his friend Ridley and says, "Be of good cheer, Master Ridley, and play the man. For I think this day we will light such a candle by God's grace in England as shall never be put out." Try to imagine that moment. What courage. That's incredible. Everything inside of him is panicking. I'm sure fear was rising up in his throat, the kind of fear that would turn a mouth to sand. How can he even get words? And not only does he have words to encourage his friend, it's witty. We're a candle being lit today that's never going to go out as their body is literally being set on fire. I thought it'd be a great name for two conference rooms, and then, I think I'm losing that battle. But that is so awesome, that kind of courage. You know, I wonder how I or you would function in a moment like that. Now, maybe you've been, maybe not burned at the stake, but maybe you've been in some tough situations and you learned something about your heart. Did you have courage or did you cower under fear? No judgment here, but that's revealing about what Latimer's soul was like. His thoughts were able to rule over his fears, right? His vision, his values, the cause for which he was giving his life was more important than the life itself, and he recognized that. You know, to have your thoughts overtake your fears, it's like a fireman running into a burning building. The minute you feel the heat, I imagine, I'm not a fireman, I've never done this, but the minute you feel the heat and hear the crackle and the roar of the, everything in you says, get out of here. But in your mind, you're like, I've gotta go get the people or whatever's in there. And you have to be able to overcome the fear and press through. It takes courage. So that's our value this morning. I'm talking about fortitude is the technical term. We've been looking at the values for Lent, and there are four cardinal values and three theological values. The three theologicals are faith, hope, and love. And the cardinal values are prudence, temperance, justice, and now the fourth one, fortitude, being stout of heart. And the text I've chosen for this is Matthew 14, 22 to 33. If you want to look at it in a pew Bible, you can. It's the gospel passage I just read. Peter walking on water. Or rather, Jesus walking on water, and then Peter going for it. I mean, he walked on water. We might get caught up in the fact that he doubted and he looked at the waves and started sinking and cried out, but he walked on water. He got some steps in, and probably, 15 steps to get out there, close enough that Jesus could grab him, and then they together walked back. Just try and imagine that scene. I mean, where did he get the idea, first of all? It was a flush of courage and faith. He had the courage to get out of a perfectly fine working boat in a rough storm, and he had the faith to think, well, if that's Jesus and he's walking on water, there's no reason that I can't by trusting him. But I try to picture it. He was overcoming fear. They thought they saw a ghost or some kind of apparition or a phantom or whatever, and they were terrified by this in the middle of the night. But I try to imagine that first step. You know, how did he do? Like, did he grab onto the gunwales and put his foot over and go trying to feel the bottom? Like, where does it get solid? It was not like a glassy, frozen lake. This is a storm that they had spent 9 hours trying to row across, and they were just getting pushed back, and they couldn't do it. And here comes Jesus, probably wet from his waist down, just from the splashing. I mean, he's stepping over waves, and he's walking through this thing. And now Peter, like, did he test it? Or did he like do an Indiana Jones, when he's going for the Holy Grail and he goes, there's that faith walk scene and he goes, like almost closes his eyes and just goes, he's either going to fall into the chasm or there's something he's going to land on. I don't know how Peter did it, but he had courage to take that first step and to start going. And then he probably started thinking, this is impossible. I'm on a sea. And he took his eyes off Jesus and started sinking. And then he cries out, save me, Lord. And Jesus asks the rhetorical question, why did you doubt? Little faith, why did you doubt? Really helpful question to think about, actually. Why do we doubt? What causes that? Now, Jesus, it says, made them get into the boat after he fed the 5,000. So he was setting something up here. He sent them across. And if you're in Matthew's gospel, if you turn back to chapter 8, he had fallen asleep in a prior storm in the stern of a boat, and they woke him out of terror that they were drowning, and he said, be still. And immediately the sea was totally flat. And they said, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? There's a lesson to be learned there. The answer to their own question is, this must be the one who created this sea. This is God in our midst. And so here they have an opportunity again to see if they've learned the lesson. Jesus is constantly testing his disciples for their sake, to reveal where they are and also to help them go further. So here's my big idea this morning about fortitude, is that following Jesus tests and grows your level of fortitude. Or courage, it's synonymous. I like fortitude because it's a word we don't use very often. But as a disciple, if you decide to start walking with Jesus, he is going to test you, to strengthen you. And he's going to test timidity, if you're resistant to step out as a disciple. He's also going to test rashness, if you're just prone to action without, kind of thoughtlessly, without really thinking through, why am I doing this? Now, the philosopher Aristotle, as he studied the virtues, did not think of a virtue and a vice as the polar opposite. He actually saw virtues as the average or the mean between two other vices. There was a vice of excess, and there was another vice of deficiency. So, like, for fortitude, it would be cowardice on one hand, and it would be recklessness on the other. And the true fortitude, the courage, is to be neither. Not to be a coward, nor to be reckless, but to be brave in the right moment. So, what's your courage level like? Do people say you're courageous? I find that if you're an action-oriented person, you're more likely to fall into recklessness, maybe. And if you're more of a contemplative person, you're more likely to fall into not doing anything, being timid. You're just going to keep thinking about it rather than take the first step. Whereas the other one's not thinking at all and just jumps in without and should have thought some more. What are you like on this one? What's your courage level? What's your fortitude at this moment? There's a bunch of definitions for fortitude out there. I've kind of amalgamated them into this definition. I think this is useful. Fortitude is the strength to face adversity, danger, or pain with resilience. I'm working with that. Fortitude is the strength to face adversity, danger, or pain with resilience. And there's two prongs to it. On the one hand, there's the kind of courage you need to go and do the hard thing, like rushing into the burning house to go into something. There's also the prong of when you're at a moment and that pressure or pain is increasing, to not flee or run away, to stand fixed in that moment because that's the right thing to do under the pressure or the persecution. I mean, Jesus said, blessed are you when you are persecuted for my name's sake. It also says that if you want to live a godly life, you will be persecuted. To be a disciple is going to put you in a pressure cooker. Sometimes he'll ask you to do something like walk out on faith, and you'll have to take the courage to do that. Sometimes it'll be the courage to just stand firm when everybody else is abandoning him. It's tough. It really is. And Jesus warned, in this world, you will have tribulation, but take heart, I've overcome the world. So he does not promise that it's easy to be a disciple. He says you're going to have trouble. And following Jesus as a disciple or a student prepares us to handle it. I like the term disciple or apprentice better than the term Christian. In fact, disciples used the most, Christians only in the New Testament 3 times. Disciple picks up the idea of I'm coming alongside as an apprentice, a student of the great rabbi, and he's going to teach me how to live this life. And that's where the virtues come in. He's preparing us for something to be kingdom people, and so he's building in us a virtuous heart. When you come to him, that's what he's going to work on. Now, the context, as I mentioned, right before this, he fed 5,000 people. He did this incredible sign. And even in that, John's gospel tells us that he tested them, saying, where are we going to buy food? I think the test was to say, There's no food to be bought anywhere around here. And he's like, you feed them. What do we have? A couple loaves and fish? And it's a test to see, do you acknowledge the magnitude of this moment and what I'm about to do? And he does the incredible, the impossible. It's a test. It's testing their faith, their trust in him. In Mark's gospel, this walking on water, Jesus walking on water, is not in one of them. It's in three of them. Matthew, Mark, and John pick it up. For some reason, Luke doesn't. But in Mark's account, it says that Jesus intended to walk past them. He didn't, it wasn't like, oh, they're already halfway across the lake. I'll walk out to the boat. He was going to do a kind of a flyby, like a theophany. He was going to reveal something, and maybe they would see him and go, whoa, he just fed 5,000. We know he's God. Look, he can do anything. There he goes. All right, let's get rowing and catch up to him. I don't know what he was hoping would happen, but he obviously turns course if he intended to walk past them because they're terrified. So he's like, I'm going to go over and help them. And he goes toward the boat, and they're thinking it's a ghost. And then when he speaks, he says something very interesting. This whole event is revealing his glory. And it's one of those places where in the English translation, we're missing the importance of how he says this. Because do you remember the name that God gave to Moses when Moses said, who are you? What shall I tell the people? What's your name? I am. And in the Greek language, the verb to be is eimi. And it literally means I am. That's in the first person. It's conjugated with the pronoun is part of how it conjugates in the grammar. So you don't need to say the pronoun I, just eimi means I am. But what he says is ego, eimi. I am. Like that. He does it seven times in John's gospel. And that's what he says here. And he says, take heart. In other words, have fortitude, have courage, be of good heart, be of good cheer, Master Ridley. Take courage, I am. Don't be afraid. That's what he says. And then at that moment, Peter says, if it's you, Lord, call me to come out on the water. And he does. I am. They didn't understand, Mark says, about the loaves. In Mark's account, they were afraid because they didn't understand what it meant that he fed the people. 5,000 men plus women and children. They just didn't get the message there. They didn't understand what was happening. And so he asked the question, why did you doubt, Peter, you of little faith? Really helpful question for us. When we lack courage or when we let fear take over, it's a good question. Why is this? Do I not believe that God is sovereign? Do I not believe that he's with me? Do I not believe that his word is true? That I am totally secure in his hands, regardless of what comes in my life? If I have to burn at the stake, I know I'm still in God's will. Do I not trust him in the sickness or the adversity? Why is my heart doubting? Now, as a disciple, or as a Christian, I'm using the one I like least of just Christian disciple apprentice. When we think of being Christians, to say I believe in God is cheap. It's easy to say that. To show it and demonstrate it by a life of being his student is very different. To demonstrate that I'm following in his ways requires courage and fortitude. Most people are not. There is resistance if you're going to be serious about this. There might even be resistance from within the church, from other people who find it odd that you're so serious about your faith. You know, why are you so serious about following Jesus? People say that kind of stuff from time to time. But Jesus said this is not going to be easy. He said, if anyone would follow me or come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross. That's an invitation to death. I mean, the cross is an instrument of death. And he's saying, you're going to have to put stuff to death. If you want to follow me, you got to put stuff to death. You're going to have to grow in courage. So where do we get this courage? You can't just muster it up. I mean, at some point, my own willpower is not enough. I'm going to need another power source. And we look at Jesus, one as an example, but also the source for that power. Jesus had incredible fortitude on both of the prongs of it. Think about it. He told them three different times, I'm going to be handed over, I'm going to be tortured, and I'm going to die, and on the third day I'm going to rise. And then he went into that garden and said, pray with me, and they're falling asleep, and he is so overwhelmed with anxiety that he's literally sweating and blood is coming out of his cells. He is praying to his Father, let this cup of wrath pass from me, if it be possible, but not my will, but yours be done. He did not want to go to the cross. It was a huge amount of courage to keep walking through. And what happens when they come with the guards and they arrest him? Everybody else scatters. He's left totally alone. In fulfillment of prophecy, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will scatter. It's exactly what happened. They all ran away. And later Peter denies him. And Jesus goes silently, like a lamb before the shearers is silent. He goes silently in, willingly. And then not only did he have the courage to go in with the plan, once he's on the cross, he is dealing with huge temptation even in that moment. Remember when he's tempted in the wilderness by Satan three different times? Satan's saying, if you're the Son of God, if you're the Son of God, and the temptations come. Well, now he's nailed to the cross. And Satan said, the Bible tells us he left him until an opportune time. Well, he's nailed to the cross in great agony. And people are saying, if you're the Christ, come down from there. Again, if you are who you say you are. Even the thieves said, yeah, if you're the Christ, rescue us with you. Get us all off these crosses. I actually think that was a real temptation for him. He had all the power to do it. He could have been like, I'm out of this mission. But he stayed. Courage sometimes is staying when it's hard. He stayed there because he loves you and I. He could have saved himself, but then he couldn't have saved us. He stayed there to save us. He had the courage to go through with the plan, and then he had the courage to stand in the difficulty. This is who our God is. If you're the Christ, come down from the cross. He doesn't even defend himself verbally. When we are faithless, says 2 Timothy 2, he remains faithful. We have that dependability. Now, every day, if you're a disciple, every day is an opportunity to grow in courage, to grow in fortitude, to take up your cross daily, he says. Actually, daily is in there in Luke 9:23. And I think it's interesting if you look ahead to what happens. These disciples are being tested. They were being tested when he said, where are we going to buy the food? And they're like, there's not enough food. And then he does it, and they pick up 12 baskets full. And then they're tested on the water when he's going to walk by, and they're terrified. You know, and they learn the lesson of who causes the wind and the waves. Well, Jesus, I think, sent them ahead because he was about to test them again to grow them. So he's the one who was letting the wind hold them back. The fourth watch of the night is between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. They were rowing for a long, long time before he got there. And then the very next day, the crowds walk around the north part of the Sea of Galilee, and they find him on the other shore. And they have a whole dialogue in John chapter 6. And he's like, you're looking for bread because you had your fill, but, you know, they have this whole dialogue about Moses and the manna. And he says, it wasn't Moses that gave you manna. It's the Father who is sending the bread right now. I'm the bread. You have to eat me to have life. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no part in me. I give my life, my flesh for the life of the world, he teaches in John 6. And you know, in John 6:66, people are like, this is a hard teaching. Who can go with this? And many of his disciples deserted him. And then he turns to his immediate guys, Peter and the guys, and says, what about you? Are you going to leave as well? And in that moment, they had courage. And he says, we know that you have the words of eternal life. Where else are we going to go? You know, their fortitude grew by seeing what Jesus could do and what he did do. He walked on water. He miraculously fed the people with bread in the wilderness, fulfilling Moses' theme. He's giving them an opportunity to grow in fortitude. Now, if you fast forward ahead, all but two of them died by martyrdom. Pretty violently. Peter was crucified upside down. James was killed with a sword. I mean, and the two that didn't, one was Judas, who betrayed Jesus. I mean, he saw all these signs and hardened his heart and did not believe, and then took his own life. And the other one was John, who was spared probably long enough to care for Jesus' mother and to write John's gospel and the epistles that bear his name in the book of Revelation. But he was exiled on the island of Patmos for most of his latter years. It was not easy. These guys grew by being students of Jesus. They grew in fortitude. They got courage. And by the end, they gloriously died as martyrs. So I think about, take heart. Lord, help me have the courage to do this. I want to close just by reading a statement from, just a paragraph from C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters. I usually share this on the Journey Retreat to encourage students. The law of undulation, where sometimes I feel very faithful and sometimes I don't feel faithful. And courage is to do the faithful thing when I don't feel it. Now, Screwtape is a demon, and his nephew Wormwood is being mentored to be a demon, so this is backwards. But he says, "Don't be deceived, Wormwood. Our cause is never more in danger than when a human, no longer desiring but still intending to do our enemy, God's will, looks around upon a universe from which every trace of God seems to have vanished and asks why he has been forsaken and still obeys." That's fortitude. We need God's Spirit to help us with that. We need to ask him to give us the courage when we don't feel it to behave like what we know in our minds to be true about who God is. It's through a lifetime of learning that that Latimer and Ridley were able to go with courage to the stake and die like they did. It's the death to self over and over again. It's fortitude. And so let's pray and ask the Lord to give us more courage to be his disciples. Would you join me? Lord, I thank you for the examples, both good and bad, of your disciples and the process of getting more and more courage. Lord, I pray that you would help us not just here in church when it's easy, but in those other times in our week when we doubt, when we struggle. I pray that, like Peter, we would reach out, that we cry out for you, because you're there to give us your hand and help us. Fill us afresh with your Spirit today, that we would have courage to be your students. I ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen.